podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and is for informational purposes only. Listeners should always seek the advice of a mental health professional or a qualified healthcare provider with any questions they may have regarding their mental health or any other medical condition. The information provided in the podcast is based on personal experiences and is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice or guidance. The podcast should not be used to diagnose or treat any mental health condition.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inside Quirk Time podcast. And here with me is
Sangalore.
And my name is Hilary Jiwanju, and I am your host for today's Pridecast, a special for Pride Month. Today we're going to be discussing our
mental health.
Yay!
So, okay, can we get a quick round of introductions before we begin?
I think we have already introduced, but here we go again. My name is Pramodoji. My pronouns are he, she, they.
My name is Sangalore, and my pronouns are they, them, their, it.
And I am Claire Tomatsu, but you can call me Ray, and my pronouns are he and they. So, today we'll be talking about mental health.
Yay!
A topic that's very close to all of our hearts.
We're all personally...
Without permission.
We're very well acquainted with mental health in this department.
Very well versed with this topic.
Yes. So, let me start by asking the question. What is the value of knowing mental health?
Before we start, I think a trigger warning, because at some point we might be sharing our stories, which might be very triggering.
That is
for some of our listeners.
Yeah. Yes. So please to be warned that we might talk about certain topics on mental health.
That might be triggering for some people. So if you are triggered easily, please do not watch or to proceed with caution. So again, let me reiterate. What is the value of knowing mental health to you?
For me, I think the value of knowing my mental health, it's, I'll call it a state where I am, or I am in control about certain things that I feel about, or certain feelings that shouldn't, I think that is under my control. So this is coming from the place where someone I think who has been, I think, going through lots of anxieties, especially I think mine, the one that I'm diagnosed with is social anxiety. So I do feel that the value of knowing one's mental health, it's, I think, in a way, I think it keeps you informed about your mental state.
Yes.
And on top of that, in a way, I think it can be naturally, or in other scenarios, you have to seek other people's help, but developing coping mechanism to at least know that lighting, your state of mental health will not affect your day-to-day functioning.
Yes, I agree with that, because as a person, you should know yourself best, I feel. And knowing when you are mentally well to do something or mentally not well, unfit to do something, is a power and skill, I feel. And knowing that is a strong, it's your own, like, it's strong, how do I say it now? It's power in your own hands, right? So, really, knowing mental health is very important for everyone, and it should be not taken lightly, I would say.
That's true. I think, knowing your mental health, we always think that, you know, we're the one controlling our bodies. We never think of our own body as a different entity. So our body has a way of communicating with us and telling us, okay, some things are good, some things are wrong.
Yeah.
This is good for you, this is bad for you. And part of mental health is listening to our own body. It's like, we're always doing certain things, but we don't, when our body says no, I think we have to listen to that no. And a part of mental health is responding to that and knowing what is good for us, what is bad for us, even if the society might be against it.
Yes.
If the choices are right for us, we need to know that it's right. And I think that is somewhere that we find our happiness.
Yeah.
To say.
Because you are your most important person, right? And if you aren't happy yourself, I don't think you'll ever be happy, right?
And that's where you learn to prioritize yourself.
Mm.
which is really important.
I think, when it comes to the society in general, or even like in talking about specific or Bhutanese society or context, that prioritizing yourself is looked upon in a way that, like, you being quite selfish, I think. Mm. And that's where the value of no comes in. Because as a society, first of all, we are obviously taught that it's very rude to say no to any social engagement or anything, I mean. So when that value has been quite, like, instilled in you, so in a way, I think it also reflects upon your mental health as well. I mean, where, like, there's certain times, I mean, like, when I do not feel well, or I do not have that energy to get out of the bed, but because of certain commitments, or maybe randomly a work pops up, and I think, like, you cannot say no to that. So for that, I think you have to, I think, ignore whatever you're feeling and, like, go ahead and just, like, I think, go ahead and fulfill those commitments. And in a way, I think that makes your mental health much worse, I mean. So not only in, I think, we have to know the value of no, I mean, especially in terms of our mental health as well, because there are certain times, I mean, like, for our own sake and just to prioritize ourselves, I mean, like, we have to say no to certain things, certain engagements and all that. And it's okay, I mean. Of course, like, because of that value of, you know, like, saying no is being rude, and there is a certain guilt associated with it. But at the end of the day, I mean, we have to cultivate this idea we have to cultivate this feeling of, like, prioritizing ourselves first without having to feel that guilt.
I think, especially when it comes to peer pressure, I think we realize the very importance of no. Because everyone's like, oh, you should do it. But then when we actually say no, it's a big thing, especially for us.
Yeah, FOMO is a thing also, right?
I think you have no idea, like, under peer pressure, like, I have end up in so many social gatherings without me physically, emotionally, mentally wanting to be there.
Yes.
Just because my friends has requested, or my friends has forced me. Or in other times, I can also be the perpetrator as well, like forcing some of my friends, I think, to come for social gatherings where she or they might not feel, I think, comfortable with.
True.
I hope we're not the peers that cause the pressure.
So do realize that sometimes you are the perpetrator sometimes. Mm-hmm. So
we have to realize that, I mean, we have to change our perspective or the lens that we look in, because just like the community movement itself, I mean, when it comes to mental health as well, I mean, we often tend to see ourselves through the gaze of a victimhood, I mean. True. So, but we also don't realize that, like, we knowingly or unknowingly also cause so many distress to other people around us as well, which will, or in some cases may not, affect the state of mental health. So we have to, I think, like, we have to have a very inclusive, I think, perspective, I think, when it comes to talking about mental health, of us being someone, I think, of being a person that is going through mental health issues, and also has this potential to be potential to cause any mental distress to other people as well. I mean, that's along true. The way,
being self-aware is key, I would say, with mental health.
It is.
If you're not self-aware, I feel like you will go down in a spiral and then you will reach rock bottom. So, a small thing for mental health. Yeah, so next, let's move on to some misconceptions of mental health that you feel are there in the community.
I do have, like, vast experience about the misconception, I think, because I personally have been through it all. I mean, the very first and the most popular one is, like, why are you being so weak? You can just get over it.
That's true, yeah.
And why are you making such a fuss out of it? I mean, just get over it.
Not that hard. It's not that big of a deal.
Just look at the other person. I mean, he's going through so much, but he looks so well. But look at you. And, like, it's such a small problem. True. I mean, and the other thing is, like, there are certain times, I mean, like I said, that the mental health comes in stages. I mean, sometimes you feel on top of the world. The other times you feel like you're literally on the bottom of a barrel. I mean, you can't crawl out. So there are times that you act out, and there's so many emotions involved, maybe the sadness or, in most cases, aggression. So, and, like, most of the people are like, ooh, I think this person is someone that we don't want to hang out with, because because I think that person's nature is to act out. True. Maybe he or she or they craves attention and they're acting out of it. So I have been often labeled as someone I think like who's very difficult to get along because of my mental health, and my preference to stay in my comfort zone, which generally involves very few people and certain surroundings.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think I've been like always misunderstood for being this rude person,
yeah,
or the people hating persons.
Just because you have space for yourself, right?
I think the one myth that I found is that people don't know the difference between mental health and mental asylum.
Because
I remember this time I found it really difficult to focus.
Mm.
So I pre-diagnosed myself. I wasn't diagnosed. So I was like, I just...
Self-diagnosed.
Self-diagnosed. And I was like, I might have ADHD.
Okay.
I told my mom that, you know, I wanted to be counseled. And I wanted to talk with someone. And she was like, oh, you know what happens to people like that? They go to the...
mental asylum.
They go to the hospital. The special people. And I remember, because what was going on with me was something that I could cope with, you know?
Mm.
Not something major, mm, like dementia.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that they really need to talk about when it comes to mental health.
And do you think maybe the trauma that we experience in our childhood or trauma in general has something to do or it's a contributing factor in terms of our state of our mental health?
Of course. I feel like childhood trauma is always like a building block, one of the really important building blocks of mental health.
Mm.
If you don't have a good childhood, I would say it causes a lot of pain in the future. Like, you don't realize it, but then it catches up to you.
Mm.
Like, your body has a defense mechanism, mm, where like it blocks out memories from your childhood, but then it will somehow resurface in the future and then you'll have trauma, you know. It's how you grow up. If you get bullied, if you don't have a good relationship with your parents, if you don't, you know, do good in school or anything, small things, you know, it can snowball.
Yes. And then when we go to therapy and we're like, okay, why do we have this problem? And then suddenly
the answer is
yes,
childhood trauma.
And when we share our childhood trauma, we're like, oh, and then
it clicks.
Yeah. Because the job of a therapist is to connect the dots.
Yeah.
For me also, I think, Of course, I mean, looking back, I mean, I was experiencing a form of social anxiety for quite a long time. Mm. I mean, from a very young age. So, but for me, I think it was quite difficult because I did not have the vocabulary or the knowledge to identify and pinpoint saying that this is what I'm going through, because that time I was quite very, very young, I mean. But I used to avoid people like anything while going to school. Towards the point that I even like used to like put my life at stake,
mm,
and like choose routes which were like quite risky and like shady.
With less people.
So, but I think, of course, I think for me also, I think like being in therapy for some time made me realize that these are some of the things, I think, especially when the things I went through when I was young, be it being bullied from the very young age, where people around me made me realize that I don't fit in with them, and it's very okay for them to degrade me by calling me names such as Chakka or something like that.
Mm.
And my peers being very, very obsessed with my genitalia to the point that they start grabbing me and like trying to pull my go or maybe my in underwear and to see my genitalia.
Yeah.
And towards a certain point, even like my parents' long, lengthy divorce process has in a way affected my mental health. So I think for me to piece this everything together, I think took quite a long time. I think. And to realize that I am product of my circumstances, I think, and just to accept it and find a mean and a way to live with it is another battle that I'm fighting right now.
It's true. So, what would you say are the symptoms of mental health?
Symptoms?
So, something that we can know as individuals, you know, when our mental health is down.
Oh, for me, I would say having low energy and not wanting to speak to people for days on end. And just not wanting to do anything, actually. I feel like that's not a sign of laziness, everyone. Like, people do say, oh, you don't want to do stuff because you're lazy. It's not usually like that. You're just not mentally capable sometimes, right? You're just not in the right headspace to even, like, do anything.
But as a society that we're living in, which values hard work, I mean, like, we have been always told that, oh, in order to succeed in life, you have to go the extra mile, to put in the extra work. And our parents and our people around us also comes with the same mentality. So when you express anything, or when you go through the slump, for me, I call it the very dark hole or the slump. And I also do have times when I go through it where I do not have the energy and all that. So people around me come and often label me as a very lazy person.
Yeah.
Or
me too.
Or this is very, I think, or someone I think who doesn't have any any goals in life. I mean, so it is quite difficult. I mean, like, to make people understand that as a human being, there are other days where I feel super productive.
Yes.
And there are other days where I feel like, oh my God, I do not have the energy to get out of the bed.
Nope, nothing.
And well, I think most of the days is like, it's neither here or neither there. So these are the days that can get too easy. Yeah. But these two extremes sometimes very difficult to balance.
And then I think we need to remember that we are humans at the end of the day, right? Sometimes being great is not achievable for everyone.
Or and then I think not everybody's goal to become great. I just want to survive, or I just want to be mediocre.
Yeah, living day to day is some people. Sometimes living day to day is hard for some people. Mm. Like, when you're in a depressive state, like, you don't even want to live, right?
Mm.
And, like, it comes in many forms. Like, depression, like, mental health is very vast, and every person experiences it differently, right?
Mm.
So what about you, Lode?
I think before Sangye says, I also have to pile on another question. Okay. I mean, especially for Sangye, I mean, like, you are someone, I think, who does hold that capability that is inside you to just go and like be light of everything that is like where in whichever I think scenario, situation or surrounding you're in.
Just because you're smiley,
people with mental health are supposed to look in a certain way. They are expected to behave in a certain way, or they are supposed to look malnourished or something like that.
Another misconception.
Yeah. So I do care to elaborate on it.
Yes. To be honest, that question is very interesting because when I actually tell this story, people actually find it's very sad, you know?
Yeah.
Because I grew up with my coping mechanism being, you know, standing in front of the mirror whenever I'm sad, and I pull my lips and I force myself to smile. So now I smile all the time because it's in my brain, you know, that I have to smile all the time. It's not that I'm happy, it's just that it's how my face is. You know, when you do something to the point, it becomes normal.
Yeah, happy.
That's why. So people always think, oh, why are you always happy, Sangye? I'm not always happy. I'm actually traumatized. That's why, you know, it's actually a lot of dark humor surrounding it. Yeah. So when it comes to a few symptoms that I recognize is that I'm really passionate in the work that I do because I don't do work unless I'm passionate about it.
Yes.
And yesterday I was doing some work that I really loved. And when I love the work, I can do it immediately. Like, tuck, tuck, tuck. But when I notice my mental health is degrading, is when I start losing passion.
Yeah.
And then I can't work, I can't focus. And I start to doubt myself and I'm like, oh, am I
good enough?
Am I losing my touch with my work?
Yeah.
And then I realized I just needed some rest.
You need a break. Take a break, everyone.
So when you lose passion, that is a huge symptom.
Yes.
For bad mental.
And I think, what I believe in, I'm talking from my personal experience, is like taking a break is also a very privileged thing to do. I mean,
true.
So because I think when you are in, when you race, for life, I mean, and in a way, I mean, you are responsible for your own sustenance,
true.
Survival. So, and I think, especially in our culture, I think, there's no such thing as like, taking break or like in Western, I think Western setting, so it's quite difficult. I mean, like taking break.
That is
true. And I can personally talk on my behalf because here I am, associated with the entity and trying to work for that entity. And plus, on top of that, I mean, I also have my education to look after, my degree. And on top of that, I mean, I do have other engagement with my friends and family. And sometimes I do feel that I do not get the time for myself. I mean, so these are the time when I completely shut down, when I don't receive people's call, and when I'm like literally, I think, staring at my phone for hours and hours. And, but this kind of coping mechanism or break is quite bad for you and your physical health. And of course, eventually your mental health as well, because the moment you are in a slump, you, if you do not have the proper support system, I think you feel that you're literally sleeping further down into that hole. And towards the point that there are times that, I mean, like when you question that why you are alive, I mean,
oh my god,
always.
And it's quite difficult, and because of your commitment, I think taking break is also
hard sometimes.
It can be very difficult.
I mean,
you really have to go to the extra mile to do that, by sacrificing some of the engagement. And it's a circle, it comes back around, and people say that, oh, this person didn't respond to my email, oh, he's not responding to my call. And like, so these are the things, I mean, like, with this, that, that, no, like, as a human being, I think, like, it is, like, not capable for us to be, like, productive all the time, I mean.
Yes.
So, and especially someone, I think, who is going through, experiencing mental health issues, so my days are mixed back. I mean, there are days like, well, I feel at top of the world, there are days I don't feel at all. So I think like people, and one thing I've noticed is like people are not accommodating at all. I mean,
no,
they are not. I mean, and they're busy trying to label you.
Oh, yes.
With various labels.
So right now, since we talked about our traumas, but we're still here, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about our coping mechanisms.
Yeah, let's talk about tips for you to get through
life. How we are the way we are, but we're still alive.
We're still alive. We're still going hard at it. So a quick tip I will share is, you know, like I said, taking a break is really important, but obviously some people can't do that. But however, it doesn't have to be a big break. It can be like a small, like a minute, like just stop what you're doing, take a big breath, like deep breaths, you know, and then just like close your eyes and then just relax. It means a difference, but it makes a difference. Like you will not understand sometimes, but like when you do it, it just snaps. And taking a walk, you know, it's always nice sometimes. Getting fresh air is really important,
and
people.
Physical exercise is known to prove that effective
endorphins
for mental health.
And opening your blinds. Usually mentally, people who struggle with mental health don't keep their rooms, you know, pretty. They tend to keep their rooms pretty dark.
He speaks from experience.
Yeah, I will speak from experience. I do not like the sunlight personally, but then sunlight has vitamin D. So vitamin D helps you, you know, produce endorphins, you know. So it's pretty important, okay? Keep your room well lit. Mm-hmm. It affects your mood. Any tips, Els?
Yes. And this is coming from a person who gets a lot of panic attacks. And people don't believe that I do get panic attacks, but I get a lot more than what people believe that I do get. But whenever I get panic attacks, I know everyone says this, but it's the basic. You need to start there. Try breathing, but you need to take deep breaths. I need to... You need to exhale it, like really let it go. If that doesn't work, you try tapping around your arms, like start in your veins and then go from your head to toe, tap every part of your body, because that gives you that realization. It brings you back into reality. And if that doesn't work, you try writing, you try running.
Journaling, I think.
Yes.
Journaling.
Because when it comes to panic attack, the first thing you need to know is you need to do something that makes you comfortable and happy. So, so basically.
Something that you love.
The person you are when you get a panic attack is not you. So you need to do something that brings you back.
It reminds
to
me of
who
the Snickers
you
ad, you know? You're not you when you're angry.
So that's one of the few tips that I have. And this might not be the best tip, but you need to isolate yourself.
Yeah.
You need a lot of space, and you need to give you
that
a
might
of
not
time.
Be. I think that. That might not be for all. I mean, isolating. I mean, so there are certain times that when you have to reach out to, let's say, the person you trust most.
That's true.
It can be your loved one or dear ones, or even your counselor.
Don't forget to talk to people.
And a therapist. This is my secret, but I'll share it with you. I schedule my cries. Like, you know, sometimes when I'm really stressed, I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta cry later. And I have a video that always makes me cry, so I do that. And the next day, when I wake up with so much more energy.
True.
Might be it's really funny, but it really works. Trust me.
That's a cute.
That's like, I think, something new.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. But hey, whatever works for you, by the way.
Yeah, right? I think, like, to each
their own.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to understand that, like, I think there's no set coping of coping
mechanism. Yeah,
coping mechanism skills. I mean, like, each individual has their own. I mean, when it comes to me, I mean, mine tends to be a little bit on expensive side. I mean, for me, I mean, when I feel the slump days, or when I feel that my panic attacks are increasing, then in an ideal situation, I would prefer to be in a different surrounding. It can be a different city or a friend's home, or even a different country as well. I mean, like, for me, the feeling of alienness, no, like, and existing in those surroundings gives me a sense of, I think, I don't know, a sense of ease.
Yeah.
To know
a new environment.
And to know that, okay, I mean, I can, like, physically distend myself from whatever is bothering me by the surrounding. But if that doesn't work out, which usually don't, most of the time. So, I've learned this to my therapist. It talks about awareness exercise. So, the moment I get panic attack, which happened occasionally, mostly, I try to center myself saying that, and I'll try to talk to myself saying that, Prema Dorji, you are Prema Dorji, I think. Right now, you're walking in the street, and they have three people coming in front of you. And I'll be telling myself that in your head, you have made this 1,000 assumptions saying that, they might make fun of you or something, or they might think your hair is weird, your glasses are weird, or you walk funny or something like that. But this is not what they're thinking. This, just like you, these people are minding their own business. I mean,
sure.
So you shouldn't panic at all. You should, like, just take a step back and try to compose yourself. I mean, and the moment I do that, then I could at least feel the sense of, like, uneasiness inside me. I mean, I'm not saying it's gone all the way, I mean, but it is some amount of still there, but it's something that it's very controllable. I can control it, and I'll not just break down, I mean, like, or have this, like, massive blinding panic attack to the point that, like, I might fall down or just freeze. So these are two things that I do. I mean, so yes, I think this has been working for a while, but I don't know, coping mechanism tends to change quite a lot. I mean, I think as you evolve, as you go ahead in your mental health journey, I mean, your coping mechanism tends to change as well.
Remember to take life one step at a time, you know, because if you try to take big steps, you will feel the pressure of it. But if you do one small thing at a time, so if your room is really messy, you pick up one piece of laundry a day, you pick up one thing a day, and then over the weeks, you'll have no stuff in your room anymore. It's like that.
Yes. And I think the best coping mechanism is the one you find for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you know yourself the best.
Yes.
I feel like we were helpful in a way, but then at the end of the day, it's you.
So what might work for us might not work for you. So
yeah,
there's no such rules to know, to say that this coping mechanism is there.
So yeah. So with that, we end this episode of
Take a Deep Breath. And think about life.
Take a deep breath, okay? One step at a time. Good night, everyone.
Good night.